Now, I'm delighted to say that joining me in the studio is our own Mark Finnegan. First sub, off the bench to replace Fergus for the morning that's in it. Unfortunately, Fergus couldn't be with us due to the fact that he's at a funeral. So, as everybody knows in Ireland, those things take precedence. Good morning, Mark, and a Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, Donny. Good to be here. And
thank you so much for joining me.
I'm honoured to be first sub for the great Fergus. I hope I'm worthy.
if you haven't picked it up from the connotation of the slagging, the reason that we're saying that is because Mark is here to have a look back on the year that was from a sporting point of view for 2016. Quite a lot happened, and if time permits, we may have a little look forward into 2017. But Mark, 2016 for you, sport-wise, talk to me.
I think the year of the underdog is probably what it'll be most remembered for. I mean, we had the outstanding achievement of Leicester City winning the Premier League, which I think anybody who follows soccer was most definitely a huge achievement on, and I don't think anything we'll see the like of again, a club of that stature.
Did it kind of put the lie to the thing of that, you know, where a lot of the so-called experts were going before this, that these big trophies in countries are now bought by the club that can afford the most expensive and the best players? Did it put the lie to that temporarily?
Well, it did temporarily. I mean, that would be the rule. That would be the norm, I would imagine, throughout, especially probably in most team sports, where the more money you throw at it, you can afford the best players. But there's always exceptions to the rule. And what Leicester City did last season was an incredible achievement. I mean, it went on and on and on, and people kept saying, no, they can't. And it just kept going and going and going and going. And they did it, and it was quite an incredible achievement. I don't think we'll see the like of it again. Or we may, but it's probably a once-in-a-generation thing. I think if we go back to maybe Brian Clough and what he did with Nottingham Forest in the 70s, taking them from the second division, winning the fourth division, going on and winning the European Cup, a small provincial club like that coming out, taking on all the big boys, not just of England, but of the Premier, of the Europe as well, and going on. And Leicester haven't had a great season in the Premier League, but they're into the last 16 of the Champions League, so they're rolling on in Europe as well, and we wish them the best of luck. But you know, definitely the underdog year, and I mean, from an Irish point of view, Connacht were another incredible underdog story.
Brilliant to see it, though, wasn't it? Absolutely brilliant.
Winning the Guinness Pro 12 and winning it in the manner that they won it was incredible. Playing some great rugby. Nobody would have expected them outside of Connacht. Nobody would have had them down as even semi-finalists.
I would venture to say, Mark, that a lot of people in Connacht weren't too...
I would imagine so.
Maybe as the year rolled on that they got a little bit more belief. But I think it was almost a case that with the Connacht supporters, you know, dare we dream.
Yeah. And they dared to dream, and the dream came true, and a magnificent achievement. And the final against Leinster up there in Edinburgh, I think it was, and I mean, most pundits and most observers or casual observers like myself would have probably said, you know, Leinster, it'll be a... But Connacht beat them, and they beat them well and deservedly won on the day. And again, as underdog stories go, that was incredible. And at the start of the Pro 12 last season, as you say, I don't think anybody or many people outside of maybe the Connacht camp would have been given them much of a chance. And it was a great, great story.
I suppose, Mark, in fairness, if we jump slightly forward and look at, you know, look at 2017, it will probably different without Pat Lamb there.
Absolutely. It's always going to be a struggle when you have changes of that calibre at the helm of any club or any sport, you know, and especially in rugby, the way rugby seems to... It's not something we see necessarily in soccer, but in rugby, it always seems to be, it's a unit, from the coach to the physios to they're all one cohesive unit, and that's how things work in rugby. And if you take any small part out of that, and Pat Lamb would have been an integral part out of that, it's always going to be difficult. I mean, they qualified for the Champions Cup. They're not doing great from memory. I haven't seen much of it, but I mean, it was a great achievement for the man to get to the Champions Cup, and You know, hopefully yeah, they can go on
kind
now.
Of, I think the way I nearly described him this year, Mark, is, or for what I've seen him, certainly, well, I won't say this year, but certainly since the word came out about Pat Lamb moving, I've seen him playing maybe two or three times. And to me, the way I would describe it, it seems to be blowing hot and cold. They have good days and bad days. Whereas last year, as the year went on, you had confidence every time they took to the pitch. Now you're kind of wondering which Connacht is going to appear, really. So,
I mean, again, going back to the Leinster story, these achievements are the impressiveness of the achievements of Connacht and Leinster are only proved out then by the fact when they come around again and they struggle to maintain that. It just proves the levels they reached to achieve what they did in 2016. And for another great story from 2016, we have to go to your own home county and the O'Donovan brothers.
Pull like a dog.
Pull like a... What an amazing story. I've seen them on TV over Christmas on Graham Norton, and they've become internet sensations.
They are... they're just something else. They're just something that comes along, you know, every so often. But I think, for me at this stage, the story of the O'Donovan brothers and the O'Donovan brothers and their persona is nearly becoming bigger than what they've actually achieved.
It is. They're becoming, as I say, and I don't know how many times over the last few days I've clicked into social media and the clip from the Graham Norton show was there. And they're great characters, and you can see them going... I'm sure they're going to be getting inundated with all kinds of media offers. I hope for their sake they probably say, no, listen, lads, we want another crack at this Olympic thing. Because I think they've a gold medal in them.
We want a different colour the next time.
Well, they certainly have a gold medal in them. I mean, I think about the Olympics. Team Ireland going to the Olympics, we probably would have all had our hopes pinned on the boxers.
Undoubtedly.
And we all know what happened there. Lots of controversy in the box. And I think what the most damning thing we can say about the boxing at the Olympics is every judge and every referee from the Olympics has been suspended by the IABA. So, I mean, they're all under investigation.
Yeah, but
we all know.
And that's as it is, Mark, and that's fine. But that's of scant consolation to the lads that got done out of medals and the girls that got done
absolutely.
Out.
I mean, when you look at Michael Conlon, especially, he was so enraged.
But he was so far ahead.
And it's called into question all kinds of stuff. And when we were doing a review for the Tuesday Night Sports Show, I look back on some of the clips that are on YouTube now, and there's one that's on there. It's about 13 minutes long. It's Mick Dowling, Michael Caruth, Bernard Dunne, and they're in the RT studio. And it's the immediate aftermath of the Michael Conlon fight. And as they're saying, Michael Caruth in particular, he says, I run a gym, he says, out there in Drimnagh, Crumlin. He says, what am I to tell my young lads now?
I saw that, actually. How am I to tell them that this is a fair sport and a level playing pitch and all this?
And it was huge disappointment given, you know, most of Ireland's hopes going into the Olympics would have been pinned on the boxers. But we did have the success of the O'Donovan brothers and Annalise Murphy, of course.
Correct, yeah, but lest she be forgotten.
Putting behind a heartbreaker London, because you know London was such a hard...
There was big things expected of her in London, and it really is a testimony, I suppose, to the calibre of the person when they suffer that sort of a defeat and come back and establish themselves and can really, you know, establish their true credentials and are willing to put in the long hours and the hard graft and wait 4 years to do it. That is some testimony.
That's it. 4 years is a long time to carry the hard. I mean, like, we all remember in 2012, Annalise Murphy was a gold medal going into the last day and finished fourth. I mean, that's heartbreaking, you know. But she got a medal in Rio, and congratulations to her. Probably not a big surprise at 2016, although some would probably say they struggled over the line in the end, was the Dubs.
Yeah, they made hard work of what should have been pretty easy.
Yeah.
Now, of course, we can talk about it in from every different angle, and as you know, Mark, that's my passion. But look, I don't want to be getting up the ire of any Mayo listeners that we have this morning, but Lee Keegan, Footballer of the Year, No. I could. We could devote a whole show to that, and I could give you 20 reasons why he shouldn't have got it, and we could name loads more. Do you know something? To me, it's like an insult to me, because it's almost a consolation prize for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, the hand wringing would have been well done in Mayo since September, but I mean, on the fourth day, it was there for them. It was there for them, and
but that has been the story of Mayo football, yeah. Mark, for as long as I'm looking at them. Okay, there was. I can't remember, I think it was 2006 or something, or 2007 against Kerry, and it was all over in the first 6 minutes. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there have been games, All-Ireland finals, where it was there for them, and you know, all they had to do was literally fall over the line, and mm-hmm. they couldn't do it, you know.
You would wonder, is there a psychological thing? And I'm sure
has to be.
I mean, we all remember that first game, and I mean I think Dublin didn't score until the 32nd minute or something in that first game.
It was a complete misfunction or malfunction, yeah, all over the pitch.
Yeah, and I mean, you more so than myself have waxed lyrical for a long time about the Dubs. You're much more knowledgeable on it than I am, and I mean, the Dubs on that forced All-Ireland Sunday were unrecognisable.
A pale shadow of what they should have been.
Yeah, and whether they were like a deer in the headlights or what, I don't know. Whether at all, just they were overtrained, overprepared, overconfident, even maybe.
It's quite possible, and I mean, I have spoken to a few of them since, and I've actually seen a few of them, the lads there in town over the Christmas, dressed up in their suits and showing off to Sam Maguire for different stuff, which I presume they're contracted into, that they have to do, mm-hmm. and you know, they're certainly enjoying it. Now, whether they're enjoying it a little bit too much, I don't think so, because I think that, you know, of all the managers going, one guy who really is able to keep fellas grounded is Jim Gavin.
Mm-hmm.
But even on that first day, yeah, you know, he was reminiscent of the deer looking at the headlights, yeah, coming at him as well, you know. I mean, and you would say that it's a peculiar for Dublin because, you know, they have the strength and depth. They really do have the strength and depth. And look, they got there in the end, but if they are to do the elusive three in a row, I think they need look no further than go back to last year and learn the lessons from that. Yeah. You know, and I mean, okay, there's going to be 12 months on all the other legs as well, but they're 12 months down the road.
Mm-hmm.
There is a few of them that are tied up with Vincent's. They're mm-hmm. going to be going possibly until St. Patrick's.
Into March, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a lot of football to have played. Yeah. I mean, you're looking at, and I'm picking out particularly Dermot Connolly. I mean, I don't think that he has had time off in the last 2 years from football.
Yeah.
And we saw that with Colin Cooper in Kerry with the Crokes when that happened, and we saw where that got him.
Burnout.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think interestingly, and all the times during the year when we talked about Dublin, and we've often talked about this thing now of how Leinster's a cakewalk for Dublin. There's no challenge in Leinster, and they don't really get a challenge until, well, as it turned out this year, they didn't really get a challenge until the All-Ireland semi-final against Kerry.
And it's too late.
And you know, and we worried and we spoke all year about, you know, how do they prepare? Is Leinster and the way they play through Leinster and everything, is that proper preparation for when the tough football comes? And that's probably something that Jim Gavin's probably going to have to look at come next summer. Because if they steamroll through Leinster, which they will be expected to do, and again, it's late August before they're getting a test.
Well, you're looking at a situation where, realistically speaking,
they'll be caught out sooner or later.
They will, and that could be a lot of the reason that they will be caught out. And I mean, look, as I have said to you, Mark, and I have said it to you time out of number, for Dublin fans, and I know we have a lot of them listening here, enjoy it while it's there, because it is not going to last forever. Mm-hmm. Everything goes in a cycle, and you're just lucky at the moment that there's a fantastic crop of pure natural footballers, and that's what it is.
Yeah,
that's not going to last. Now, the only thing that may elongate it is the fact that he may be getting in two or three additional fellas every year to keep, yeah, keep other counties can't,
yeah,
do. And I think that goes a long way to explaining what's undoing Mayo every year, that they're depending, they're going back to the Andy same well, Morden, yeah, and all that. And you know, that's, you can only go back to the well so many times.
Indeed.
But I would be keeping a very firm eye, in fact I'd be keeping the two of them, on Kerry this year, because they have had unprecedented minor success over the last couple of years. And the first crop of those minors, they should be at senior level now. So it'll be very interesting to see what comes out of Kerry this year, you know. But if Kerry can't produce anything new, but you have to look past Dublin again, isn't it?
It is. It is. It'd be interesting to see how the year pans out. And sure, we won't have long to wait.
The Auburn Cup is starting up shortly. Yep. Mark, you're on tonight with your normal Tuesday. Tell us what it's going to be all about.
The Tuesday Night Sports Show tonight is, we're going to do our 2017 predictions. We're going to look forward to what we think 2017 might hold in the world of sports, especially in the areas of... Well, we picked six categories that we all chose. We picked the Premier League, the Champions League, the League of Ireland, the Six Nations, and All-Ireland Football and Hurling. So from 6 to 7 tonight, we'll be discussing our predictions for 2017. But if I could, Donny, if we have time, I just want to... When I look back on 2016, I have to say Sporting was, for me, outstanding Sporting moment. Usain Bolt.
Unbelievable, isn't
what
it?
Usain Bolt achieved at the Olympics, the treble-treble.
Treble-treble, yeah.
Especially in such an... nutritional sport of sprinting, I don't think we'll ever see the likes of that again. I don't know if we'll ever see another athlete who'll go that 12-14 year span and stay so consistently good.
And managed by an Irishman.
Well, there you go.
From Donegal.
There you go.
He's a phenomenon. And we had Michael Phelps signed off in style as well.
Yes, Michael Phelps, well, again, his achievement coming back and getting, was it five more goals at the Olympics, I think he got. Phenomenon. Absolute phenomenon. And guys like them don't come along too often. I think in the swimming, there's always the potential for somebody to come along and do it. But I think in sprinting 100 metres, 200 metres, it's such a nutritional sport.
It was Confucius who once said, "May you live in interesting times," and I don't think you could have much more interesting times, certainly from track and field,
no,
than to watch Usain Bolt do that. And I mean, we stayed up until the late hours to watch him do it, and it was worth it.
And given the cloud that hangs over track and field with you know, all of the dope and stuff and everything else, Usain Bolt seems to be a shining light.
I was just going to say, he doesn't seem to be touched or tarnished by it.
He doesn't seem to be tarnished by any of it at all. Now, maybe that's good PR. You know, I don't know. I don't mean to cast aspersions on him at all, but he doesn't seem to be tarnished at all by that. Where there's others people that look at and they go, there's something going on there. No one seems to say that about Bolt. We just accept that he's a phenomenon.
Also, I mean, he exudes confidence and he has a total and utter belief in his own ability.
Yeah.
He really does come across, and he's confident. He's confident without being cocky or arrogant. He just knows he is that good.
And he's a freak for a sprinter.
He is, but he also knows how and when to produce it. Yeah. You know, he seems to have the ability to store it up, and just explode at the right time. Mark, thanks a million for coming in this morning.
Not at all,
don't forget, folks, tune in this evening and every Tuesday from 6 to 7 to Mark's Sports Show. And he will be joined by...
Robbie Carr, we'll have Darragh Maher, we'll have Bob McKenzie will be with us this evening. Dave and Shane might even drop in. I haven't had contact from the mothership now in the last few days, given the festivities. But I'll be here anyway, and at least one or two of us will be here. So,
Mark, we look forward to it already. Thank you so much for coming in this morning, Mark.
Cheers, mate. You're welcome. Bye-bye.